The Cultivated Being Podcast.
All right, it's a recording. Welcome to the Cultivated Being Podcast. I guess our intro music didn't go quite as far as I would like it to, but we are here, very special occasion, very special guest we've been dying to have on the show. Jake, can you please?
You're clearly excited. You didn't do the typical who we are intro.
Yeah, because there's no point. We know what the people want. It's not us. They're here. They saw her name here, and now they're ready to hear her gems of wisdom and everything she has to say. So why don't we introduce the
We'll introduce the guest, and then we'll introduce ourselves.
Fair enough.
Okay. So very excited to have my good friend, old friend now. We've been friends for a long time.
Because we're old.
And we are old now. Yeah. It's the way life goes. This is my friend, Kristen Marr. Kristen, say hello to everybody.
Hello, everybody.
So, Kristen, we're going to have so many topics to talk about today. But Nick, who are we? Why do we have a podcast?
Well, I'm really glad you asked that question. We are two brothers. That's the most important part. Mm-hmm. And then we are also doctors, and we like to talk about brother stuff and doctor stuff. My name is Dr. Nick Hyde, and this is my brother, Jake Hyde.
Hello, everybody. All right, now we can get on with the show. So, Kristen, you don't know anything about our podcast, right? You know us, though.
I know you guys.
Okay, so our podcast, I'd say it's reflective of who we are. So if you were worried about being on like a stuffy, serious health podcast, well, you aren't.
Right.
Yeah. Couldn't be more correct, but no. This is just a pod where really it's a conversation Nick and I would have on the phone with each other that we let people eavesdrop on.
Mm-hmm.
But you're on this now, so
yay.
Three people on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Conference call.
Kristen.
Yes.
I'm excited to get into this.
Okay.
Maybe we should give some people some background, though. So Kristen and I stumbled upon our friendship as coworkers back in 2008.
Yeah.
Some time ago, you were in marketing department, and I was in what was called executive row with a really unspecific job title. Didn't have a lot of job security, which got me actually fired. Well, or downsized.
It
was a tough economy.
You got downsized.
Staples closed.
We know the economy back then. This was 2008. But anyway, before I got let go, Chris and I became friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I accidentally introduced her to her now husband.
Sure.
I mean, I meant to introduce them. I wasn't trying to play matchmaker. I knew what I was doing when I when I introduced them. But anyway, I didn't know they were going to be married, have three kids. Now they're living in Nashville, which is where I go once a month.
Yep.
I'm actually in her and her husband's studio right now.
On site.
On site.
So if you're listening and you're like, man, the acoustics coming from Jake and Kristen's microphone, so good. Because we are in like a mathematically designed room for acoustics.
Albums have been made here.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
Platinum, right. Platinum records have been in that room, but that's neither. I mean, boring stuff. We don't want to talk about that. Let's move on.
About platinum records.
Yeah.
Clearly, because I was borrowing Matt's car today, and there was just a platinum record just casually in the back seat, like framed, like platinum record just laying there, and I'm like, what a world.
Yeah. Well. What's his name again? I don't know. Kristen's husband. Let's just, yeah.
Kristen, I'm really excited because you've been very busy this last year. You got a blog. You got a book coming out.
Coming out in August.
You have three incredibly entertaining children.
Energetic.
Where do we even talk? Let's talk about your blog first.
Okay.
I want to know what like initiated the idea because I have a blog. Nick, do you have a blog?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a ton of work and it takes a ton of consistency and time and also all that personal anguish of like, should I even put this out to the public? Why should people read what I have to say? What initiated just the effort going into it?
I actually started the blog more as a support for the book because I figured when the book came out, people were going to be like, who is this person? I do not have a doctorate behind my name, which a lot of people who write about emotions and mental health do. And so I just wanted to kind of share how this book came from my own personal journey through shame recovery. And so I just talk about my shame recovery on there and different ways I find myself growing, different ways I find myself stepping backwards, and just trying to really show people my heart, I would say, for this whole process.
That's really good.
Yeah. Can you give us a little bit of background? People on this show, they say that they love stories. So can you tell us a little bit of a story of just kind of, I don't know, when you talk about shame recovery, like what are some of the stories that come to your mind about? Yeah.
Well, let's see. I'm trying to think of something I would share and feel comfortable with sharing.
That's exactly the point.
No one listens to this podcast either. It's just me and Nick.
That's true.
I actually don't really listen to it, so.
You're supposed to be editing these.
Yeah. We don't edit. That's the point. We just post whatever comes out.
Oh, man. I thought you were cleaning these up.
Apparently not. Well, I could talk about how my shame journey started. It actually started in my house with a fight with my husband. And it got to a point where I realized that I didn't want to be that person. I didn't want to be that kind of wife. I didn't want to be that kind of parent. I could feel myself falling into cycles that I had seen growing up that I always thought I wasn't going to do. And so I decided to start talking to a therapist. And that was going really good. It was uncomfortable. When I started it, I was a mumbler. I couldn't look her in the eye. It was really hard for me to find topics to talk about just because I was so uncomfortable talking about myself. And it had created such a strong narrative for my background and how everything was my fault. I was worthless. I wasn't lovable enough. And so the things that happened to me because it was me. And so that was like, I started making some slow progress with her, but what really helped me grow the fastest was when I joined a group. It was a group of a total of 6 women, and it was focused purely on shame. And we would meet once a week, and we would go around and talk about our week, and then we talk about dreams or any pressing issue we want to have, and then one person would do the work. And that involved us like role-playing out certain things and letting the person come in and out and see something that had happened in their past or something that had happened that day from different angles and viewpoints. And then we all got to kind of chip in our viewpoints. And when I was doing that, that's when I came up with my idea for my book, because I was helping someone do their work and they are describing a person that they were trying to figure out a name for them. Cause you name everybody as they're doing work. And the way she was describing it, like always made her feel bad about herself, always had her self-conscious about herself. And I was like, I'll be the awfulizer. And, which is the name of my book. and I realized for shame, that's a pretty approachable title and character for kids to understand that like the whole purpose of shame is to make you feel awful. It's to make you feel alone. It's to make you feel bad about yourself. And so I kind of took it and went to a coffee shop one day and wrote 3 stories out of it, which has been really good for my healing too, because I do a lot of self-discovery. And like I always say, like at midnight, I completely heal myself because I figured my whole life out and how to fix everything. And then when I wake up in the morning, I've forgotten everything I thought about. So sometimes writing things down has been really good.
That's really good. Yeah.
My long-term response.
That's great. That's beautiful. And why do you, because we're talking about this, I feel like we talk about this a lot. We're talking about shame all the time. Why do you think that there's such a need for this right now?
I think Well, a big thing for me and why I'm trying to reach out with kids is it's so much different now. Our society is so much different in the sense that when we were growing up, a lot of our shame came, I mean, all of our shame came from face-to-face encounters. And it was people you knew or people you didn't know, but it was people that you were in contact with. And today, with social media and the internet, you can get shamed from basically anybody. And I think it can be a really unhealthy space where people who do have their own issues and their own baggage, it's a way for them to unload. So like, you're going to be getting flack back for a post that you write, and it has actually nothing to do with your post and about you. It's about the way another person is feeling. And I feel like it's just a giant shame bomb waiting to happen. And if you are healing or in a place of starting to heal, you realize that it's not about you. It's about someone else and how they're feeling, and they're trying to make themselves feel better, and you don't have to take that on. And I don't think kids today, because they grew up in this new world, fully understand that. And I don't know if parents know to talk about that in that kind of aspect, that they might just say, hey, don't get on the internet because people are mean. But it's like, hey, they're going to be mean to you, but it has nothing to do with you. You don't have to carry that, because that's their baggage and their hurt. And they just want someone to share it with them right now. And you don't have to if you don't want to.
I like that. I think we should, just for the rest of this conversation, I think it'd be good to go to more of like a foundational meaning of shame.
Okay.
We don't have to specifically define it, but just for the point of this conversation, maybe not everyone's really put a lot of thought into shame in their lives or shame in their environment. So maybe, do you have like a working definition you use?
Yeah, I steal from Brené Brown, who, if you are trying to learn about shame, and I was really scared to read her for a long time, I highly recommend it. Just take the plunge. But basically, because people confuse shame and guilt a lot, and what people don't realize is that guilt can be a positive, because when you feel guilty about something, you're feeling guilty about an action. Mm-hmm. And so you might make a mistake, you might do something embarrassing, and you go, oh, I made a mistake, I need to change that behavior, and everything is going to be all right. But if you're feeling shame, instead of saying, I made a mistake, the thought process is, I am the mistake, I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if I change my behavior, because I'm still me and I'm still broken. Mm-hmm. And there's kind of a hopelessness in shame and a feeling of isolation and shame. And it basically makes you feel like you're unlovable and you're unworthy because you are damaged and you are wrong. And it doesn't matter what actions you take, because at the core, you're still bad. That's what I say.
So guilt is in I did a bad thing. Mm-hmm. And if you recognize that feeling, it can be a teacher, like a course corrector in life. Like, yes. Okay, I don't like how I feel after I did this, so probably try not to again.
Right.
But shame is when you identify with that wrongdoing as like, I'm no good.
It's not my actions, it's me.
Yeah, so.
Which is, it is the complete flip side of what we should be doing, but it's kind of a, it's almost a good thing. I could see why we're always inclined to that, because we want to identify in our state of being, but to the positive. I am love. I am enough. I am these things. That's all good. But when you just change the word to I am bad, I am wrong, you know, but rather than just being, you know, I'm a collection of the things I do, we should be the collection of the things. I mean, just who we are. It's about who we are, not what we do. Right. So it's kind of, it's like the mirror image of where we should be. Mm-hmm.
And that's where guilt can be wrong too, is when you say, I am guilty. Now that's like turning just guilt, which can be productive, into like a shame program. I am, now you're identifying with the thing, and now you're thinking that's part of who you are. Very significant, because, and I know, Kristen, we had a conversation last night briefly about talking about like physiology behind it, and we could maybe end up going that direction. But the way, like the thing that makes shame so dangerous to me is kind of like you illustrated earlier. I don't know if you meant to, but you're talking about how like you were afraid to read Brené Brown.
Yeah.
that like having fear of reading a book is such a shame thing. Cause like when shame becomes so dangerous, it's cause it keeps you on the sidelines. So like we're really here for the adventure, right? That's really like the only thing guaranteed to us in this whole like life experience is just adventuring towards, I think like I think of it as like truth. You're adventuring towards like what is really true. And part of that is like suffering sometimes. You know, part of that is like the joys and victories of life too, but shame just keeps you sidelined, keeps you out of the game, watching other people live and keeping you from like that risk. You know, ultimately when an adventure is, you don't know what's really going to happen. You could be hurt. Right. But shame's just like, yeah, I'm just going to stay out of this whole thing. It's not going to whether that's like reading a book that's potentially life-changing, doing counseling for the first time, right? Or like talking to a boy, or it doesn't matter what it is. Shame just like says, you know what? I'm just going to stay out of this whole thing. Because if people found out who I was, whether it's a counselor, a boy,
yeah,
a boss or whatever, if someone found out who I was, they'd reject me. Mm-hmm. And that so
literally happened to me this morning. So I really relate with this story. I went to confession this morning.
Oh, good job.
Even people who, you know, are not Catholic, they've seen what happens in the confession. Usually they've watched a movie or two.
Every movie,
and yeah. So anyways, I'm in the confession line at this church that does confession every day. Really cool. Awesome. It's like on my lunch break. So I went over there and rotating priests, and in walks, of course, the guest priest as like the priest I know the best on the planet, you know. And he walks in, he comes to dinner with the family like once a week, and he walks in and I'm like, great. And in my head I'm thinking, I was literally like, I guess I'm not gonna confess my sins today, I'm gonna leave, you know.
Let's shorten this list.
Yeah. today isn't the day for the bad ones, but, you know, I was like, well, I'm here and I'm too lazy to come back another day. So I'm going to do it. But like, those are all of the thoughts in my head because I was, you know,
shame spiraling, man.
Yeah. I was shame spiraling. Hashtag shame spiraling. Yep.
Yeah. So robs you from those enriching experiences, those like experiences that move you forward in life. So you're raising three kids.
I am.
Shame is, I would say, ubiquitous in our society, right? So many opportunities to come across, just shame in other people, opportunities to experience that yourself. So what's the strategy? Maybe this is part of what the book's about, but, do you have like an intention in your day when it comes to that emotion with your kids?
Well, I would say my first intention with my kids is typically keep everyone alive. And sometimes that's about all I can manage.
I guess first things first.
But, yeah. I have started to employ some games. We do them as games and some sayings in our household that are trying to build a foundation that I'm hoping will give them some tools when dealing with shame, and they're mentioned in two of my blog posts.
Can you talk about table games?
Yeah, that's a blog post, actually.
I might have read your blog.
One of the first things that I started, even before I started counseling, is the thing called the table game. And what it is at dinner, when we're all at the table, and there might be guests there, there may be not, you start with one person, and everyone goes around and says something they like about that person. And then to close it, that person has to say something they like about themselves. And then it moves around to everybody on the table. And I started that because I can't accept a compliment and I'm really bad at it. And I didn't want my kids, and a part of it is because I don't feel worthy of it. And so I want my kids comfortable with the idea of not only hearing positive things about themselves, but recognizing and being proud of positive things that they can see inside themselves. And so that's one of the things that I did.
So I got to play table games a few months ago.
Play table games.
Really, and what like I love it about it, they do love it. One, I think it was Connor, was like, can we play table games?
Yeah. He's really good at table games.
Yeah, he's good. So he's your oldest kid. How old is he now?
Seven.
So
Oh, wow.
He actually was, so how old are all the kids?
7, 5, and 3.
Okay. So nice. They actually were all good at it at their own age levels, their own experience levels. I thought it was really fun. And for me, you know, I think I have a hard time taking, like, I do so much throughout my day to try and create compliments in my life.
Yeah.
And then when I get it, I don't know what to do.
It's hard.
But it's fun getting compliments from just like precious kids. But your five-year-old, when it was my turn, it was really just so precious and so cute because she just kept laughing and she couldn't say anything.
Because she loves him.
That's the best compliment of all.
Like, normally when it's time for a girl to say something nice about me and she just laughs instead, I would, like, my tendency is to be self-conscious.
Yeah.
I paused. I was like, no, this is going to be good. And then she said she needed to have a private conversation with you. Then, you know, I could have taken that any kind of way. Like, I need help from my mom to say something nice about this man.
Yeah.
But I think I remember her when she finally decided what she liked about me. Do you remember what it was?
I'm trying to remember what it is. I'm not good with memory right now in my life.
It was because I was great.
It probably was just basically. I mean, we could do a very fun tangent about all the inappropriate ways Rowan shows Jacob her affection, including slow dancing with her head on his shoulder and holding his hand in the middle of the night when she sneaks into the couch where he's
crashing. Yeah, I normally don't crash on the couch, but I did last month. I crashed on the couch just when I was going to the airport super early in the morning, and Kristen's husband Matt was going to take me. So I just crashed on the couch in the middle of the night. Someone grabbed my like interlocked finger grabbed me.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, where am I right now?
That's amazing. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
I especially like this game because my best bud from West Palm, Alan, just came just to, like, you know, I was like starting the clinic in Nashville and he's like, I'm coming out with you. You need my help for whatever reason. You know?
Yeah.
And so he was at this dinner too, like just meeting the family, having to go around. Like he just like, he like just met the family. Yeah. But also they all had to compliment him too.
Nice.
It was so good.
Actually, I'm going to do that tonight. I probably have to invite one or two extra people over to make it like a full round, but sounds fun. Sounds like
invite strangers. That made it extra fun.
Really have to grab
strangers. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's awesome.
So that's one of the things I do. And then another thing I do is we have a saying that I make my kids repeat after me, which is basically, what could you do that would make me stop loving you? And the answer is nothing. And so some of my kids really love saying that. My oldest loves repeating it. Rowan, my middle child, loves to come up with different scenarios to see if it's the answer. But what if I do something bad? I'm like, I might not like what you do, Rowan, but I'll still love you. She's like, what if I hurt people? And I'm like, I don't know what I'm thinking of this. But
oh, man.
I'll still love you. I think we'll need to change your behavior, but I'll still love you. And then
Rowan is a cartoon character.
The three-year-old, he just laughs. But so that's another thing I do. And then they were my test subjects for the books. Mm-hmm. So they've heard all the stories and all the different variations. So that's been really neat to see and how they are already bringing that into their life. I have another funny Rowan story. All my life is Rowan stories.
Yes,
yeah. So she goes to a 5-day pre-K at St. Joseph's School down the road, and they just started this year letting three-year-olds into the program. So it's 3 to 5, and they halfway through the year got a new boy who's 3 and having to have his first experience of an all-day pre-K. And so he's really struggled with behavior issues because it's just a lot to come into. And so one day he was starting to act up, and I'm going to call him George. And Rowan was like, George, I need to talk to you about something. She's like, there's a thing called the awfulizer. And she proceeded to tell him one of the stories. And she's like, the awfulizer is telling you that you're bad, George. And he, because he's telling you that, you're doing bad things. She's like, you don't have to listen to him. You just need to be you. And if you're you, George, you'll be good. She's like, you just need to be George and be free.
Oh, man. That's like the sweetest thing I've ever heard.
She's good.
She's internalized it. That's great.
Yeah. And that's the point of doing it as a kid's book, because I feel like my philosophy when I was doing it is that a five-year-old has so much less back baggage to work through in the process than, say, a 36 or 37-year-old.
Yeah.
When I started the process. And I read somewhere, and I'm going to get it wrong, but basically that said that your first major shame experience and how you react to that, that kind of freezes your emotional development at that stage. And so anytime you get shamed again, you kind of revert back to that behavior if you're not taught a better way to do it. And I'm sure that was pretty accurate for me, and that mine was kind of a flight moment for me. I freeze up. So it's like if a kid can learn at 5 or 6, 7, whenever they want to read the book, healthier ways to deal with shame, because basically we're going to get shamed. There's no way around getting shamed in your life. Mm. It's just how you respond to it. And so giving them tools early to get into their heart, where they might not remember the story, but in their heart, they still remember the tools that's my goal, so that you can have healthier responses throughout your life.
That's amazing. I mean, we've talked about before, but you know, we're always talking about the subconscious mind, and before the age of 8 or so, give or take a couple years, depending on your development, your subconscious mind's just like open and active. There's no conscious barrier that's filtering your life. You know, as you get older, you'll tell a kid something and you could tell they're filtering things out with their conscious mind. Like, yes or no, like that doesn't resonate with me. That doesn't resonate with the things I've heard. And they're already starting to filter. But when you talk to like a 2-year-old, you know, who, my niece, you tell her something, she has no filter. She's like, oh my gosh, that's the real truth. You know, there's just no way she can.
And the scary thing, it's not just what you say. It's more importantly, like behaviors, right? They learn
totally
a lot about the world based on what they observe. Mm-hmm. And so with their, from a neurology standpoint, talking about different brainwave frequencies. And so this state is, I think, referred to as a theta state. I often put Nick on the spot because he was more of a neurologist than me. But from a, like a brainwave standpoint, talking like theta brainwaves, which is the same as a human adult who's under hypnosis.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Or like deep, deep meditation.
Deep, deep meditation or hypnosis.
Or like a certain part of being asleep. Yeah.
Yeah. Certain part of sleep. Certain part of like meditation or hypnosis or being like 4 years old. Like those are the same like brain waves that we're operating out of. And so think of it like a hypnotized adult when you could tell them, hey, you're a chicken.
Yeah.
And they behave like a chicken. That's just your 5-year-old kid is in that level of brainwave function.
Yeah.
So where they don't have that filter of thinking critically about information coming in. Mm-hmm. It's accepted.
And that's why I think if everyone tries to remember back to their first memory, it feels like it's a dream. You know, like there's something like my first memory, something about the snow, something about the Pascals. I'm like Ross Pascal, Hannah Pascal, they're listening, which they probably aren't, but that did not add up. I'm like, you know, we grew up in Arizona. I don't think I ever saw the snow as a kid. So
we went on a vacation with them. So I'm 4 years older than Nick for people out here. We went on a vacation. So our grandpa used to own a cabin in Pine Top, Arizona, I think. I might be making that part up. But we went on a vacation there with the Pascals in the winter. It was snowing. I remember this.
It's a real thing.
That's my first memory. And it totally feels like a dream. I thought now that I didn't
probably like
so much later in my life. Yeah.
But
we didn't really do that, did we? And mom was like, yeah, we really did that.
I was going to say, yeah, when we post this on Monday, mom and dad will confirm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They like to tell us all of our inaccuracies or.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. I think my first memory was you being born. And so that would have put me at 4 years old. That's the first like vivid memory of, I don't remember like mom and dad going to the hospital. I remember who was watching us, which was our Uncle Mike, Mike Arnold.
Nice.
Good man.
Good man. And I just remember him saying like, your brother's born type of a thing. I was like, what? the house we were in, I remember where he was standing, where I was. That's like my first.
The rest is history.
I was like, I can't wait to podcast with that guy.
That was the, you were so insightful at four. The
culmination of both of our lives right here.
I was ready for it.
This podcast. Yeah.
Kristen, yes. I may have read all of your blog posts.
Oh, well, thanks.
Tell me about avocados.
Ah, that's the new one. So I was on a trip recently with my husband at Bethel Church that they do for like worship leaders. And it's just they really just are focusing on rest and restoration for people who are leading the churches and writing the songs that are leading the churches. And part of the thing that they offer is inner healing, because Bethel Church has a really strong program for that. I think they even have like a number you can call into. I don't know the number, but if you Google it, I bet you could find it.
There you go.
And so I went in to talk about, because for me, I struggle with my writing and stuff like that, thinking I'm selfish, like that taking this time out for myself is being selfish, and I should be doing about a billion other things that are more important, even though like writing is really healthy for me. It's helping me heal and potentially could grow into something. It just feels selfish. So I went in kind of being like, that's how I'm feeling. And just wondering if that was right. And so they have you basically, they talk you into, I don't even know how to describe it, but you're supposed to ask Jesus, like, what does he think about this? And so I got an image of an avocado, which is strange and not, because I do love avocados. I mean, so good. And
nailed but also it.
Cryptic.
Jesus
image.
Knew exactly what to tell you. Avocado.
And I was like, that's weird. And so they just have you kind of sit in it and just be open and receptive to like, what does that mean? And not just walk away with an avocado. And so for me, what I thought the message that I was hearing was that if you look at an avocado, if you don't know anything about an avocado, you're an alien, you're coming to the planet, and you cut an avocado open, you think that the pit is a really important part. Because it's most times it's the bigger part of the avocado. If you remove it from the avocado, there's an indentation from where it was. Like it's the biggest part of it. And that we all know, because we love avocados, that is not the most important part of the avocado. The most important part is the green mushy stuff, because it makes delicious, delicious guacamole. Mm-hmm. And for me, all the roles that I play, like mom, chef, homework checker, house cleaner,
chauffeur,
any of those things, that's the pit of me. Like it's an important part of me. It leaves its mark on me, but it's not the best part of me. And the best part of me is me. Like I have innate self-worth. Like you can remove the avocado and there'll be a hole, but the avocado is still good. I don't need those roles to be good. And so that's kind of what I took from it. And then you're like, okay, thank Jesus for that image. And then is there anything else? And it was me and him eating chips and guacamole at the end, which is great because that's what I do with all my friends.
Yeah.
And I was talking about it with Matt recently, and he's like, you know how an avocado becomes guacamole, right? And I was like, how? He's like, you got to mash the crap out of it. And I was like, oh, well, I'd like to think that all my mashing happened. I've gone through a lot.
More mashing.
I'm sure there's more mashing, but
maybe just a little bit more salt and lime, but the mashing hopefully is done.
Hopefully the mashing is done. But yeah.
You need to be seasoned properly.
That is my avocado.
That's amazing. I mean, seriously, it's so easy to identify with. I mean, that is like every single person in the culture. In this U.S. culture, this work-driven culture, as their identity, right? Like whatever my job is, whatever I'm doing, whatever I have to do is my identity. Which, of course, doesn't make any sense, but that's how we feel, you know? this is my role, so this is who I am. But roles come and go. They change. Why would we pick our identity for something that's fleeting in the first place? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And yet, I'm saying this out loud, but I completely identify with that. So this is just me, you know, having a moment with what you said there, but mm-hmm. I got to do all my thinking out loud these days on the podcast.
This is therapy for me, Nick. This
is, I know.
This is how we get through our lives.
It's important to talk things through.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And that idea of like mashing up the, you know, the flesh of the avocado, which is kind of graphic, but that's what it's called.
Yeah.
That's why we call our podcast The Cultivated Being, because the word cultivate really means to like tear up. Huh. So when it comes to like agriculture, to cultivate the land, you like tear it up.
Yeah.
And that creates a more rich environment for life to thrive. So this is a podcast about the fundamentals, just the things that kind of tear up the soil to create a more fulfilling or enriched life. And shame is very important, because something that I think is the opposite of shame, not the opposite, but maybe one of the answers to it is compassion. Mm-hmm. And so compassion, really that idea of like, I think I'm not a philologist, I don't study languages, but I think at the root, passion means to suffer.
Yeah, it means to suffer with. That's really the literal meaning of it.
Yeah, compassion means to suffer with. And I think that idea of like creating the environment for a good life, in this agriculture type of metaphor, you want good soil, right? And I think compassion really is that soil, like creating that space for the goodness to happen. And that really is, so self-compassion is really to suffer with yourself, right? And that's like, okay, I'm not where I want to be. I'm not meeting the expectations that I had for myself. I'm not maybe like living my dreams, but I love and accept myself where I'm at right now. Just knowing that like my worth doesn't come from that. And, you know, I'm innately a really great person and who's suffering in some capacity. And I can still accept that right now, knowing it's not who I am. It's just what I'm experiencing right now. And I think when you have that compassion, then I think the shame has a hard time taking hold.
Lay Brown says that empathy and compassion are the killers of shame.
No.
So you're right on track.
I might have learned that from her.
Yeah.
I only read one of her books and listened to like 8 of her lectures.
That's a lot.
So I might have stolen some of her stuff.
You're learning.
Hashtag Jake steals Brene Brown. Yeah. You know, since we're going with this whole soil theme, I was thinking about, because here I am in NorCal, a lot of my friends are farmers and stuff like that. And we have like some of the best soil in the world. It's pretty crazy. You know, it's why you get all your berries from us and other expensive produce. But, our soil, like if you throw an apple core in the backyard, like that thing's going to grow, you know, it's like the soil is really, you know, good here. And the cool thing is when you look at the soil, it's like so mushy and crumbly and soft and all the time, like mm-hmm. not just part of the year. It's all, and what's another way of saying that? Like it's vulnerable. The soil is like really, you know.
Look at you.
Yeah.
Keep going, Nick. I like where you're heading with this.
No, you guys take it from here. I'm nervous.
You're great. No, I think that's true.
Yeah. So anyways, what were you guys going to say about it though?
I was going to ask you, Nick, what do you think the importance of the vulnerability is and how it makes the soil more fertile?
Mm-hmm. Guys, I don't like being put on the spot, but
Nick, it's just the three of us talking here. Three people having a convo.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like, you know, a part of vulnerability is humility, right? It's kind of, I think hand in hand, when you're vulnerable and when you're truly just who you are, right? You have no shield, you have no armor. You're just exactly yourself. You're pretty much invincible, right? You know who you are and no one can say positive or negative and affect you.
What? I think that's good. Cause I like defining things for the purpose of a podcast. Cause I do like to say we're just having a conversation, but now I get sensitive to like, maybe people are listening that are like, wanting to know more. So humility, there's such thing as false humility, right? That we all experience. Like you get a compliment and you're like, oh no, I'm not that great or whatever, right? And that is not humility at all. Humility is something you just alluded to when you said like knowing yourself. True humility is just knowing who you are.
I think it goes two steps further though. I've been thinking about this for a little bit. The first step I think of true humility would be to know who you really are. But then I think the second step, a further step, is to then feel who you really are. Like I feel that I know, you know, what I know about myself, I feel to be true. Mm-hmm. Cause I could know somebody loves me, but that's very different than feeling that love from the person. Right. So I think step two is to feel that. And then step three is just to be that, right? Like I'm actually fully, I'm fully actualized as this, you know, as Nick, right? That would be like perfect humility, but that's not nowhere near where I'm at, right? That, no. So, but I've always thought too, this is interesting. This is kind of the side topic here. For people who practice false humility, it still kind of works for them, right? You look at a lot of the saints in the Catholic Church, right? They do really stupid things that, you know, St. Francis is a great example of this, of like doing false humility. And at the end of his life, he told all of his brothers, don't do what I was doing before, basically. He's like, don't do the mortifications. Don't do all these things because you shouldn't do that. However, it worked for him. You know what I mean? No. But this is the point of why I'm saying this. The point is because humility is that important. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Even if you practice humility in a totally terrible way, you can still be going in the right direction to being a better human being and having a greater impact on the world because it's that crucial.
Okay. So even like attempts at humility is better than no humility.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying this right, but you guys gave me a couple minutes to talk on the mic. So it's your fault, really.
I accept that. Let's get back to maybe a better word than humility when it comes to the shame convo, which is vulnerability. What does vulnerability mean to you, Kristen?
My initial word response is scary. We're doing word association. I would say scary. But I also think it's going to be necessary if you're going to recover from shame. You have to find someone or somewhere that you're comfortable being vulnerable with and exposing those parts of yourself that you feel you have to keep hidden and protected to keep people liking you in order to heal. Because as long as you're hiding a part of yourself away, it's still controlling you. And you never feel fully accepted and loved because you know there's that one little thing you're holding back. And if you release that, it's game over. Everyone's going to change their mind.
Right. So, okay. Have you guys heard of Brené Brown?
I have.
Right. She's like an author and speaker.
Mm-hmm. She's from Texas.
Yeah. No, she is from Texas. She is. So you have heard of her. Yeah. So she specializes in kind of the shame and vulnerability conversation. The most impactful thing I learned from her, like first pass reading through Daring Greatly, was this idea of shame cannot exist in the light. Like shame is a darkness emotion.
Yeah.
And when you shine light on it, it literally can't exist. But it's that shame that drives the hiding.
Yes.
So it's this like paradox of just like if you shone a little light on your shame, it cannot exist in that. Mm-hmm. But it's the shame that says like, don't you dare shine light on this right now. So how do you like get out of that loop?
I think that's where you have to be brave.
Daring greatly.
You have to be daring greatly. Yeah. I think we just all reach a point at some point, hopefully, where we're like, I don't think I'm living the healthiest life that I could be living for myself. I don't think I'm living to the fullness of my own potential. And I've done one other talk about shame before, and I emphasize this, and it was with teenagers, and I'll emphasize this with adults, because oversharing is a thing, and sharing to the wrong people is a thing, and it will not help your shame healing if you share to the wrong person and they just turn around and use that against you. So you really have to be careful about who it is that you trust with your vulnerability. It's not that vulnerability is a bad thing. It's just that we're all wounded, and you just need to make sure that the person that you are shining a light with is the right person to support you. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Are there some other ground rules to identifying the wrong person to share your stuff to?
I think you want someone that you have. It's either a trusted professional, but even that, like, there are counselors out there that are different. I went to two other counselors before I found my first counselor, and I distinctly remember the second one I went to, I was like, something's not right. I have bad thoughts about myself. I don't think this is healthy. And they were like, you're fine. You're just a little depressed right now. You're really good from what I can see. Don't worry about it. And like sent me away. The first counselor I went to when I was a kid, they saw me playing with my parents and they're like, she's fine. You have a good relationship with your parents. There's nothing to worry about. But it wasn't my parents that I had the problem with. So it's like, even there, you kind of have to find the right fit for you. I would think seeing how they respond, like with a professional, if they're saying stuff and it is not ringing truth for you, you have to trust your instincts. Do you know, trust yourself a little bit?
Yeah.
And be like, you know what, this isn't the right person for me. This isn't going to be healthy for me. I'm going to switch and go to someone else. It's okay to switch and go to someone else. If you go to a doctor and you don't like how they are, their patient interactions are, you're going to switch your doctor and not feel guilty about it. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not true. I have stuck with doctors that I didn't like before because I did feel guilty. But a healthier person will switch. And I'm telling you, it's okay. It's okay to switch. But if it's going to be a friend or a family member, it needs to be someone that you have a history of trust with, where maybe you shared little things and they were compassionate with you in the past. And you know, you have a history of respect, I would say, compassion. I don't want to say secrecy, but like they aren't going to blab to everybody in the whole world what you told them.
Yeah.
Privacy.
Confidential.
Yeah, confidential.
Safety for sure there.
Yeah. And just someone who's going to have the time. Because some people, it's not the right season to talk to them. Like 2 years ago probably would have been a really bad time to talk to me because I had a newborn and I might have wanted to be there for you, but just physically I couldn't and emotionally I couldn't. And you could take that as rejection, and I wouldn't have wanted that at all. It's just in my life at that time, I was so consumed with just making sure everybody stayed alive and trying to get a night's sleep that I wouldn't have the extra space for anything else. So those are the things I would say, basically. If it's a professional, it's someone that your instincts tell you is going to listen to you and is the kind of interaction that you want. You get to pick and choose. It's like a restaurant, basically. You want, if you want American food, go to the American food. If you want Chinese, go to a Chinese restaurant. You're not going to go to Thai Phuket and ask for a hamburger. You're going to get curry. So make sure you find the person that you want to work with. And then if it's someone you're close with, if it's going to be a friend or a family member, it's just someone you've built up a trust with, someone who has the emotional and physical bandwidth to be there with you. Someone who's confidential and compassionate and kind to you already, that you have a history of that.
And that's where the shining the light on it, that's where the healing is. Because if it's someone who unconditionally loves you, and you say like, all right, I'm gonna be vulnerable, here's my shame, right? This is my insecurity, this is my doubt of myself, this is the pain that I hold on to, and that person says, you know, they could say whatever, but say they just go like, man, Kristen, that's got to be really hard. Like, let me know what I could do for you. Like, I really want to love and support you in this. I'm speaking in generalities. They might say something else, but that feeling of it would be like, I want to love and support you in like your pain right now. Then all of a sudden, shame evaporates because shame's that voice that says, like, if this person knew, they would cast you out. Yeah. And so that is that daring greatly idea, right? That bravery where you're like, you know, as in our friendship, Kristen,
yes,
I'm ashamed about this. And yes, you say, I love you anyway, Jake. And yes, then I'm like, oh, I feel fine now. that's the generality of it, but that's like the light, that's kind of how it works.
Yeah, the light shine, you know, the light shines and I still feel okay. It's like I didn't shrivel up and die, or
they didn't turn around and reject
me. Nothing happened. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also if you get in a pattern of that, you just hardwire that into your neurology that, hey, it's going to be okay. Every time I open up about all the whole enormous, gigantic list, library of shame that I have, right?
Right.
If I open up, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 times and nothing happens, nothing bad happens, it's okay. Well, your neurology is going to be like, yeah, that's what's going to happen every time. And it becomes easier and easier. And in the healing process accelerates, I think. Mm-hmm. Also, I wanted to say, because we have another friend who wrote a book about finding therapists called Find Your Therapy by Dr. Nick Wignall.
Wiggles himself.
Yeah. If people are listening to this and they're like, oh, you know what? I haven't gone to any kind of therapy and I'd like to. You have a lot of questions. That's a great place to start. He's also a really good writer, so it makes it easy.
Good writer. He's a handsome man.
Yeah. If you just want to have the book to see the picture and the back, it's worth it.
Not a bad way to go. Should we just keep giving him shout outs?
I mean, why not?
He has his own podcast. He's a PhD in clinical psychology, but his podcast is called 1001 Good Nights, where him and our other friend, who are both English majors in undergrad, just break down children's books.
Hey, the connection's right here. Let's get you on his podcast.
Break it down for me, Nick.
Oh, yeah. All right, we'll do that.
But yeah.
Yeah. All right, I'm fine. We'll do it. Whatever.
August 20th, he can break it down.
This came up on purpose here.
We'll do it. Yeah, we'll get Kristen on that when her book's about to come out. When you said August 20th?
August 20th.
But okay, can we also be on it with you? I like being part of your posse.
Yeah,
I won't say anything. Trust me, I have nothing to say. I'll just follow you around.
You've had valuable insights, Nick.
Don't we're in the entourage now. Yeah, Nick, let's have a talk about this.
Don't believe those lies about yourself.
I was just role-playing, guys.
You're more than just a member of Kristen's entourage, Nick. You have value outside of that.
You are, so you have worth.
Thanks, guys.
You're welcome.
I really needed that.
Time accepting this. I can tell.
You really should do the table game.
Let's do it. Table game.
Oh, right now?
Let's do the table game.
Oh, man. That's pressure.
It is. We can edit this out. But
we might have to. The first ever thing edited out. Yeah.
I hope that the way you edit it out is it stops right now. And then they know it happened, but they never know what happened.
Yeah. Or okay,
guys, and we just did the game. Now it's we're back to the pod.
Yeah.
Well, I wish we had Kristen's kids here because they take some of the pressure off.
They do, because they're really good.
And they would just be like, Nick, I like that you make me laugh. And then you move on to the next person. It's pretty easy.
You can steal Callum's. Callum's always involves poop. Sometimes he just says poop and then he laughs.
So funny.
Poop. Dude, good every time. The guy knows his comedy.
He does. He
sticks with it.
Yeah. All right. Well, if we're going to play this, then like, let's go for it.
All right.
Anytime we end up not doing something that we say we're going to do on the show, at least one person emails and was like, hey, how come you guys didn't actually do the thing you said you were going to do? So
Nick, we're scared.
Nick referenced the song 2 weeks ago and I was like, you got to sing it, Nick. And he wouldn't do it. And I pleaded with people to email just a shame. Yeah.
And we got a couple of them. We got a couple of emails. And just to make the record straight, we've only had like less than 20 emails altogether to our podcast. It's weird because we get like way more listeners, but we get like zero emails. We literally pitch it every time.
Yeah, guys, this hurts Nick's feelings. Doesn't take.
Yeah, takes I check it every email. Day. Although we did get an email today where someone made a graphic for Hot and Spicy, which is becoming our new tagline. Hot and that Spicy. Was it was our dad, but but totally unexpected.
Oh, that's our official tagline, Kristen. You know this. Hot and Spicy health tips.
All right. Yeah. Sriracha for your soul.
Whoa. Did you guys just get goosebumps? Sriracha for your soul? That was amazing. We're doing this thing.
Since you said it on our pod, it's part of our intellectual property now.
I freely give it. I freely give it.
I don't know if that's how it works. But
I don't know sriracha, but I do.
I don't know how any of it works. This is all free anyway, so yeah. For now. We're not probably ever going to monetize anything we've ever done on the show. If anything, we're going to come up with our own fake advertisements about Casper mattresses and not get paid for them. Something like that.
I hear you get 100 nights free.
Hey, I heard some other podcasters say it's really comfortable bed. So,
spring.
Yeah. Maybe anyway, you should get one.
We only advertise products we use and believe in, like sriracha.
Yeah.
So much.
Yep.
All right.
Anyways.
Are we doing this
Let's
game?
Focus.
I think we need to game it up and then just wrap up the pod.
There's pizza at my house. It's pizza movie night for the Meyer family.
Oh, sweet.
We got to get to that, Nick.
Yep.
Well, I'll start about Kristen. She'll show me how it's done, how you like respond and react to a compliment.
Okay.
I have to say, you know, it's been a while since I've actually had the pleasure of talking with you, but I've been reminded how incredibly easy it is to talk with you. You are, you know, just, I'm trying to put this in a different way, but you receive it in such a beautiful, like, grateful, easy way. It just makes it like a delight. I should say that's the word I'm looking for. You're a delight to be with and to talk with.
Thank you.
Things aren't coming out of my mouth very easy today, but
hard.
Yeah. Practicing.
Nick, I can't wait till you say something nice about me for a change.
Oh, that's how this works? That was just about...
All right, so now Jake has to talk about me, and then
yeah, because we all go about one person.
We go around.
Okay.
Got it. Kristen. Now it's making sense.
Yes.
Yeah. Got to learn the rules. Kristen, you are, like very few people I've ever met, I would consider a fun... accelerant. So in any situation, you come into that situation and the fun turns up, the moods turn up, everyone enjoys their time more, everyone's just a little bit happier about whatever that situation is, and I enjoy that so much about you.
Well, thank you. You guys are going to make this very difficult for me when it's my turn. I will say what I like about myself right now is that I am trying to be more vulnerable, and I was very scared to be on a podcast and talk because I was like, who's going to want to hear what I'm saying, what I'm talking about, and I have no expertise, but I did it anyway, and so I'm proud of myself for being brave. That's what I'm proud of.
All right.
Nailed it.
Next, Nick.
Okay.
You go first, Jake, or should I go first?
Yeah, I'll go. Let's see. Nick's got a pretty nice beard, but I don't really feel the need to talk about that here. What I like about Nick, I mean, I did give like his best man speech. Forget what I said. I don't want to reuse anything.
It's been a while. So I don't know if anyone would even really remember, including, well, definitely.
Both of us. Yeah, both of us. Okay.
I didn't want to say me, but.
It's in your summary.
What I like about Nick is he just has a powerful sensitivity to souls, right? To like the deeper part of people. So in conversation, even in like bigger settings with multiple people, Nick's always like in tuned with the deeper parts of people such that he can like feel that in them, but also draw that out of people too. And that is just, I think, one of the most remarkable qualities of you. And I really like about you.
That was very kind and very generous for you to say that. Thank you, Jake. Appreciate it.
I'm going to say that mine kind of ties in with Jake's, but is a little bit different in that also it's been a while since we've hung out, but that you are such a good listener because I think people feel safe and relaxed around you. Like you are a place that you could get light shined on. Do you know what I mean? Mm. You are a compassionate, empathetic person. So email Nick with all your fears because he is a safe place.
Well, thanks. We'll see what happens with that one. But no.
I'll start forwarding
some of them to you if I get a little bit overwhelmed, which is anything more than like two emails. That's overwhelmed for me. So okay. Thanks, Kristen. I really, really do appreciate that. That was very kind of you. Oh, I have to go over myself.
Yes, yeah. You do.
I think what I really like about myself right now is that I'm finding a way to be easier on myself, to be kinder with myself. It's very easy for me to, in the past, to be critical of everything I do, and I'm finding a way to just relax about it. And that's been, wow, what a relief. So I like that about myself right now.
Good.
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Way to go, Nick.
Yeah. Last but certainly not least, Jacob.
That's me.
That's you. Do you want to go first, Nick, or do you want me
to go? Yeah, I'll go.
All right, brothers.
I don't know if this is part of the compliment, but Jake, I don't think I've ever enjoyed you as much this year as I have any of the other years that I've known you. I think the biggest testament to who you are is I think you have like the most best friends of anybody I know. And that says everything because you just relate with people in such an incredibly deep way that you make best friends with everybody. I mean, you've been, yeah. Anyways, don't get me chills here. You get what I'm saying. Yeah, fill in the rest, I guess. But yeah, I really like that about you because I get to be one of those people.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Dank. Aww. Love you, bro.
Jake, I'm going to say what I like about you, I think, and I'm appreciating more about you as I go through my healing, is that you're not afraid to challenge yourself. I feel like even if the growing is uncomfortable, you never seem to be afraid to do the growth. And I think that's really awe-inspiring. And I'm very impressed with that. And I really like that about you.
Thanks, Kristen. You're welcome. It helps a lot. I think, okay. It ties into what I like about myself right now. Is right now more than any time in my life, because I'm historically like risk averse. Like I would challenge myself, but like way within competence. But lately I've been allowing myself to be more open to failure in just little things in life, but also like bigger adventures in my life. Just allowing myself more grace to not succeed or to mess up or whatever, things that used to be like, I think would have like ended me or who I thought I was, right? Mm-hmm. And so lately I've given myself a lot more grace to just kind of be a human and mess up sometimes and not succeed in, you know, what I set my mind to. And I really like that about myself right now. It's a great conversation, guys. Yeah. All three of us feel great right now.
I feel fantastic. I feel
good.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
This is a good game.
This is a good game. And we like all of our listeners because they're clearly the best listeners on the planet. They're listening to us. Kristen, how do people find you?
I have the blog is at www.kristinmaher.com. And that's KristinMaher. And then I'm on Instagram as The Awfulizer. And I have a Facebook page, Kristen Maher.
And if any of you guys do this table game, like with your family or with your friends, I think it'd be fun to do with your friends, like out to dinner. But you do it and you have an experience, like share that. We'll, you know, if you want, we can read it on the pod because it's a good game.
Yeah, you're out with your friends and you're doing the table game, post it to Kristen on Instagram or something.
Yeah, that'd be great. Tag me.
Tag her in it.
Yeah.
And Nick, we have an email address, right?
thecultivatedbeing@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. And it's in the show notes. If you want to reach us, all the places you could reach us are in the show notes.
Yeah. DrJKI.com. And then, we love hearing from you. Nick loves when you email asking about him singing. He loves it. What else? I think that's it, Kristen.
I feel like I'm just going to interject here that there should be like a cultivated being, like your first cultivated being YouTube should be just a clip of like an old school performance of Nick at what was it called?
Gosh, Hoodstock.
Hoodstock.
Guys, you need to stop this right now. You need to stop this conversation.
Because that way you don't have to sing now, but you could do some, you could show your other talents.
Dancing. Okay.
I know
if anybody wants to, it's all on YouTube already.
There's one on YouTube that I know of.
If you
there are multiple ones on YouTube.
On YouTube. It's worth it,
people.
Oh my gosh.
Also, I shouldn't even be saying this right now. Greg Spendler and I have an award-winning movie on YouTube.
Oh.
From the UD Film Fest.
That's gosh.
That's I'm not going to give the title, but if you guys are really bored and you really want to humiliate me, you can do some deep dives into YouTube and find it. You have to get creative, though.
It will be very embarrassing for Nick, so do it. Or email me privately and I'll send you a link.
All right. Well, that was about enough of that. So this is a good show. Kristen, I'm seriously really happy you're on the show and you're able to do this. And we're going to have you again at least a couple times.
Yeah. That'd be awesome. Maybe like closer to your book release. We'll do it again.
That'd be great.
And we'll get you on our friend's show about children's stories.
I really would like to hear how they dissect it.
They go full English major breakdown on kids' books. It's pretty
grammar is not my specialty. I'm like
it's about it's
yeah.
Yeah.
It's anyway. Not. If okay. if they're doing syntax like grammar dissections of children's books, I don't think it's gonna be a fun show for people to listen to.
So.
I have a comma here, but really.
It is fun. It's a fun. All right. Anyway, enough about other pods. We love you guys for listening. Kristen, Nick, love you. Talk again soon.
Sounds good. Peace.